So next up is our audiobook review of The Black Prince by Iris Murdoch. And this was first published in 1973. And once again, we are indebted to our friends at Calibre Audio who has supplied this audiobook to us. If you want to know more about Calibre Audio, you can go on their website, which is www.calibreaudio.org.uk. Or if you prefer, you can ring them on 01296 87012. That's 01296 872012. First, a bit more about the author, Iris Murdoch, and then we'll have a short précis of the book The Black Prince. Murdoch was born in Dublin, but moved to England when she was just a year old. She made her writing debut with Under the Net, which was published in 1954. She went on to read classics at Somerville College, Oxford, and was awarded a research studentship in philosophy at Newnham College, Cambridge. In 1948, she returned to Oxford as a fellow and a tutor of St Anne's College, and later taught at the Royal College of Art. Her novels include the Booker Prize-winning The Sea, published in 1978, the James Tait Black Memorial Prize-winning The Black Prince, and the Whitbread Prize-winning The Sacred and the Profane Love Machine, published in 1974. Murdoch had a number of other novels on the long and short lists for the Booker Prize over the years, including A Fairly Honourable Defeat, which was longlisted for the Man Booker Prize. She was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease in 1997 and sadly died in 1999. Murdoch is ranked 12th on the list of the 50th greatest British writers since 1945. The Black Prince tells the story of Bradley Pearson, a 58-year-old man who has previously published three books. In order to write a great literary novel, he quits his lifelong job as a tax inspector, but soon finds himself struck with writer's block. He decides to spend the summer in a rented cottage on the coast for inspiration. But before he can leave for the coast, a series of events keeps him at home. At this stage, I don't want to say too much more, as I think it would give the plot away. So I have in the studio with me Debbie Heath to do our second audiobook review, which is The Black Prince by Iris Murdoch. And I'd just like to thank Debbie for recommending Iris Murdoch, because I had not read anything since The Sea, which I probably read about 15, maybe 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And having read The Black Prince now, I am ashamed of myself that I haven't been back to Iris Murdoch more quickly, because I really enjoyed it. It was a great recommendation.
Totally agree. I think I've only read a couple and I'd forgotten how skilled she is. And she's just got that right balance of making a cracking story that is really quite unpredictable in places, and you can't help but turn the pages. And the characters are really complex. They're believable, but they do surprise you. So I found it a really rewarding read, and I think I will be reading more Iris Murdoch going forward.
I will definitely be reading more Iris Murdoch, and any listeners out there who have left Iris Murdoch, I suggest you do get back to her at some point. We're probably going to start with the character of Bradley, who is the narrator, and whose story the book mainly portrays.
Yes, so Bradley is a writer. Like a lot of us, he's been a writer alongside a day job. Now, he worked in a tax office, I think, didn't he?
That's right.
Yeah. Yes, but he's retired early and he's only published one book up to this point. And his idea is that he's just going to go for it and write this book that has been bubbling away inside him for years. And for those listeners who write, they will understand that terrible itch when you've got something you need to write, you've just got to do it. And the worst thing that can possibly happen is people interrupting. Not just any people, not just the postman, not just the milkman, but people who you are emotionally invested in enough that you cannot ignore them. And you have to put those people first, whether you like it or not. So I really identified with Bradley at the beginning of the book, because I've been there, definitely.
Yeah, yes, and he is interrupted. And we won't go too much into who and why and what happens in that sense, but there are a series of interruptions of loved ones, basically, who have different problems and different issues, which thwarts him getting away, and he's really desperate to get away to write this book. Let's illustrate this with a quote from the book.
We naturally take in the catastrophes of our friends a pleasure which genuinely does not preclude friendship, This is partly, but not entirely, because we enjoy being empowered as helpers. The unexpected or inappropriate catastrophe is especially piquant. I was very attached to both Arnold and Rachel, but there is a natural tribal hostility between the married and the unmarried. I cannot stand the shows, so often quite instinctively put on by married people, to insinuate that they are not only more fortunate, but in some ways more moral than you are.
As time went on, I began to question whether he was actually a really selfish person, because he's not particularly compassionate to any of these people, some of which have some genuine problems. And then I started thinking, well, hang on, Bradley has lived on his own for probably 25 years.
Yeah.
We know that he was married and we know that the marriage failed. But he has had quite an insular life. He hadn't had children. He hasn't had to think about other people and their feelings. It's not that he's selfish as such. He's just self-absorbed because he's had that luxury to be able to. We know that his marriage didn't work, so we can assume that perhaps he didn't give his wife everything she needed emotionally. In some ways, yes, he is frustrating. But at the beginning, I got him. And then as time goes on, I thought, no, I'm not sure that I like you very much. And that's really brave of Iris Murdoch to take a character and portray him in a way that we're never quite sure if we can empathise with him or not. I mean, that's a central character.
It is. He does seem a little bit emotionally restrained, doesn't he? As you say, he doesn't seem to be able to react to other people's high emotions. And his reaction is to sort of veer away from it. Which you say could be because, as you say, he lived by himself for such a long time, or could be a streak of quite nasty selfishness and not being able to emote or empathise with other people. We do kind of see him react with the other characters, who of which I again struggled to like very much.
Yes, and yet, now this doesn't sound like a great advertisement for the book, but it's so compelling.
Mm.
All these little twists and turns. I mean, I can guarantee there will be someone in this book for everyone, won't there?
Yes.
I would have thought. There are characters who we find amusing, or characters at first who we empathise with, and then you see that they make interesting choices. It's actually, the whole book is about choices that people make for better or for worse, really, and how
it is.
They interact.
It is, very much so. And the choices that they've made have sort of come back to haunt them in some sort of ways as well.
Mm.
But you're right about Iris Murdoch being very, very brave in that sense that these characters are odd and not necessarily likeable, not necessarily pleasant, but still you want to know what happens to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. It kept me reading the whole time. I wanted to know what happened next because we could see from going from one mess to another that they were failing in some ways, but you wanted to know how this was going to work out.
Yes. I mean, a mess is a really good way of describing it. You know, it starts at the beginning with this guy who's trying to write a book. One thing after another goes wrong all the way through. And you think at one point, oh, surely the story's wound up. Oh, no, that's happening. OK, right. It's fascinating. She's such a good storyteller.
Yeah.
And it's a story within a story. And you do question the narrators at various points, don't
yes.
you? And
I almost felt like it was because there were so many people appearing at Bradley's front door. It almost felt like a kind of stage play where you could imagine
yes.
seeing his room and then there'd be another knock at the door and someone else would come in. It almost turned into a farce in the sense that
there
were so many characters turning up. And that's not meant in a disrespectful way because it is in some ways a little quite funny. But in other ways, it was quite farcical because as soon as one person had left, another one would turn up and cause another problem for Bradley. I guess in those sense, for someone who had left an isolated life, to suddenly have all these people turn up on his doorstep with differing problems, he didn't cope too well with it.
No.
This is Bradley talking about his sister Priscilla, who has turned up at his flat unexpectedly.
I closed the door and went back to the sitting room and closed the sitting room door. I felt very shaken. I cannot stand unbridled displays of emotion and women's stupid tears. I was suddenly deeply frightened by the possibility of having my sister on my hands. I simply did not love her enough to be of any use to her, and it seemed wiser to make this plain at once.
So let's talk about Bradley's sister, Priscilla, who, as you say, her life is falling apart. Her marriage is falling apart. Everything's gone wrong for Priscilla. Now, Iris Murdoch, I think, was being quite brave here. As a female writer, number one, she's taken a male voice as Bradley.
Yes.
But she doesn't portray the female characters in particularly good lights. And when I first read it, I thought, oh, that's funny, because I'm sure this was written in the 70s, but it's got a real 1930s sort of feel
yes,
to it.
It does.
In that Priscilla has been very much defined by her being a wife.
Completely.
Completely. Yeah, that's all she seems to do. So when that marriage falls apart and the husband doesn't want her anymore, it puts her in a very difficult position.
She's utterly dependent on her husband for everything. She's a full-time housewife. And she's quite desperate when her marriage falls apart. And you're right. And the other female characters, again, I thought they all seem to in some way rely on their partners, their male partners, for their...
Or their father.
Or their fathers, for their own identification, for everything that they needed. And I thought, OK, is this because this was written in 1973? And, you know, although 1973, the second wave feminist movement was going at that time,
yes.
And Iris Murdoch must have been aware of it. She must have known about it, and whether she was reflecting what was happening in real society, that women were still very much identified by their partners, or whether she wanted to sort of play with that idea and see where it went, because ultimately the women do, and I don't want to give away too much here, succeed in the end, is the best way of putting it.
Yes, I suppose they do, yeah.
Yeah. So, in the end, the women do find their voice and do have influence on the narrative.
Yes.
But you're right, it seems quite sexist in a way.
Yeah, well, I suppose what she's doing here is showing the male attitudes and disapproving of them, because it's very clear how Bradley feels about Priscilla and her worth. You can tell through the author's voice that she doesn't think much of Bradley's opinions on various things. So,
yes,
yeah,
that's a good point.
It kind of works in that way.
That's a good point. By making Bradley be so awful about his sister that you kind of think that's very unfair, and revealing the sexist attitudes by talking through her character, which is, as you say, a pretty clever thing to do. Now, there's an interesting dynamic between Bradley and Arnold, because Arnold is a prolific writer, a successful and prolific writer who writes a novel a year and has obviously had great success and has earned a lot of money from it. And Bradley's a little bit snooty about him, isn't he?
Yes, he thinks it's lowest common denominator type
yes.
fiction, isn't it? And that he doesn't really show any depth to his work, that he's sold out. I mean, that's a phrase, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes. Yes, it's a very good example of that. Let's play another quote from the book.
It has been suggested, especially in the light of more recent events, that I envied Arnold's success as a writer. I would like at once and categorically to deny this. I sometimes envied his freedom to write at a time when I was tied to my desk, but I did not in general feel envy of Arnold Baffin for one very simple reason. It seemed to me that he achieved success at the expense of merit. As his discoverer and patron, I felt from the start identified with his activities, and I felt rather distress that a promising young writer should have laid aside true ambition and settled so quickly into a popular mould.
Yes, he's very snooty about it. But clearly Arnold has... If he hasn't achieved greatness, he has achieved notoriety, which is more than Bradley
and financial success.
Yes.
And there does seem to be a tension between them, the two novelists. But there's always that big argument about sort of high art versus low art, and I think that argument continues today. I mean, if you're popular and successful, can you be artistic and have an intellectual bearing? Or does success and popularity mean that you have to appeal to the lowest common denominator? It's really difficult.
And yes, in that sense, Arnold and Bradley need each other because they need to have these intellectual discussions. Mm. They need to rub each other's corners off. Everyone does need each other in some way in this book.
So three reasons to read this book. Should we take it in turns?
Okay, yeah.
One thing I did notice, and you'll appreciate this too, Debbie, it's beautifully written.
It is.
I mean, the language is superb. It's so cleverly done. It's almost kind of Baroque in its style. It's elaborate, and I really, really enjoyed it. She has such a gift with words, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a long-ish book, but it is a page-turner, and I really appreciated the way the novel was structured. It is in sections, and I felt that really helped the pace of the story. It helped the rhythm of the story. I think it has been very well put together.
Absolutely. One thing we probably haven't discussed, but I have put down in my notes when I was reading it, is there's a lot of humour in it. It's unusually funny. It's quite witty. I'm just thinking of Bradley when he discovers he's in love, throwing himself down the carpet and just being prostrate on the carpet for hours on end.
Yes.
I mean, there are moments of comedy in it, I felt. There are humour.
Dark humour, like the period where he's sitting in a theatre and hasn't been feeling well and knows he's going to be sick. And that's happened to me. That was a great 30th birthday. And I just felt that that really showed Iris Murdoch's humour and understanding of the human being. It's a really interesting piece of work by one of the best female writers I think this country has ever, certainly female novelists that this country has ever produced. Actually, she was Irish. Absolutely amazing writer. Yeah, I would very much advise you to pick up a copy and give it a go.
Absolutely. Please do go to Calibre Audio and you can stream or download this book. Thank you so much, Debbie.